Wired Jesus Podcast, February 11th, 2008. Creative Commons license.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
Wired Jesus Podcast.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's home to me.
Wired wanderings of a postmodern pilgrim.
I walk this empty street on the boulevard of broken dreams.
And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Well, I don't like your God. Your God scares me.
My boy, we're pilgrims in an unholy land.
Hello, and welcome to the Wired Jesus Podcast, the wired wanderings of a postmodern pilgrim. I'm your host and fellow traveler, Tom Lieberg, and I'm glad you've come along for our journey together. 2008 is here, and last week I turned 44. A graying Gen Xer, it's still a little odd to be hanging around pastor circles and still be called young. In our ELCA tribe, the sad truth is that that's pretty accurate. If the numbers haven't changed in the last 4 years or so, only 15% of current ELCA pastors have been born since 1964. That makes me a young pastor in the mind of some. Even though I've been a pastor for nearly 18 years and have a son ready to head off to college in the fall and have vague memories as a 5-year-old of watching the moon landing on a TV with rabbit ears. In interviewing at congregations, that's kind of happened too. Sad truth there is the average member in an ELCA congregation is in his early 50s or her 50s, so I think it's around 52, 54. So there, too, I come across as a young guy, which still strikes me as weird. But still, as I've interviewed with congregations who are looking for a new pastor, part of my perceived youth is my passion for postmoderns and my fluency in postmodern communication, media, internet, postmodern styles of interactive worship and such. And many of our conversations that I have with these congregations revolve around trying to understand the new terrain of the postmodern world and what that means for a congregation, as well for a pastor who is desiring to go there. So how do we talk about Jesus in a meaningful way? How do we become an authentic community instead of a club? And how do we engage in an emerging future without giving up our past? It makes for some interesting conversations, and it's part of what I'll be doing this Sunday for the Act 3 Forum. How do existing congregations with origins in the modern world transition into a postmodern world? Particularly knowing that right now we're in this in-between time where the two are blended. My presentation is going to be recorded, and so it'll be posted on the Act 3 website, and when it's done, I'll shoot it out as a podcast here as well. In looking back over the past 3 years as I've done Wired Jesus, if I ever hit on a podcast that really seemed to capture a clear understanding of postmodern community, then it was show number 18 on The Burning Man. When a listener sent me an email that the podcast brought him to tears because this was the kind of authentic community he was looking for in churches and couldn't find, it obviously hit a chord. The interesting thing is that Burning Man began as a modern thing, a part of the whole counterculture movement, and it's morphed into a postmodern cornerstone. In light of the Act 3 Forum, I'm going to rebroadcast that episode today as prep work for Sunday, but also as a prelude for an upcoming podcast that I'm going to need help from you, my listeners, to do. Because of a church leadership initiative that I'm helping out on. I'm on a web development team. I've finally taken the plunge into Second Life, which we're looking at as a viable way of doing teleconferencing and group building. I'm still cutting my chops on Avatar Island, and we'll need some more time to trick out my avatar. But a friend is taking me on a guided tour in the next week or so. And if there's time and permission, I'll even make a stop at an island that's being used by pastors like my friend who are working on a doctoral program in emerging ministries. What I need from you is, if you have spent time on Second Life, give me your recommendations on spiritual sites. Do they work, or do they just come off as cheesy? Are there real people, or I should say people doing some real conversations like what we do here? Or, as I'm guessing, are there just plenty of whack jobs interested in saving people from hell and Meat World? So send me your thoughts and recommendations, and I'll use them in a podcast in a couple of weeks. On a personal note, thanks for the emails that still keep coming in. The process of finding the next place to land as a pastor takes some time, and I'm still in that process. Hopefully things will become clear in the next 4 to 6 weeks, and I'll be able to let you know where I'm headed. God has a sense of humor about such things, but his tendency is not to let you in on the punchline until he's ready, not when I want to hear it, which sadly is right now. But we'll keep plugging away and see where the Spirit leads, and go from there. So here's a best of for you for your Wired Jesus fix. And until the next podcast, thanks for listening to Wired Jesus, and see you out there on the road. Wired Jesus Podcast, September 25th, 2005.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
Wired Jesus Podcast.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's home to me and I walk alone.
Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim.
And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Well, I don't like your God. Your God scares me.
My boy, we're pilgrims in an unholy land.
Hello, and welcome to the Wired Jesus Podcast, the Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim. I'm your host and fellow traveler, Tom Lieberg, and glad you've come along for our journey together. Before I jump into the Burning Man, just want to do a couple things here real quick. Thanks for the emails for those of you who missed me and were checking to see what's going on. Just been absolutely chaotic. Life at the church, we've been gearing up for regular fall activities. My son's in the marching band, I'm a band dad, I'm a soccer coach, and what can I say? The podcast got bumped out a few times. So I'm hoping to get back on track, rearrange some things now that I know what my fall schedule is like, which is different than the summer. So thanks for the contacts, and we'll get back into the swing of things here. But as I said, before I move on to the Burning Man, I did want to clue you in on the Katrina relief page, which probably I should rename Hurricane Relief, because after seeing what's happened with Rita, it's not nearly as devastating, but there will be opportunities there. I have added a few things, and it sounds like from my sources that things are beginning to ramp up down south for volunteer opportunities for people to actually go down and help. With the levees breaking again in New Orleans and everything else, there's just going to be more and more opportunities for people to get involved hands-on. And it's going to go on for months and years, I'm sure. Here in northwestern Ohio, groups are getting ready to house evacuees who are willing to come this far north. It's not really the best time of year for someone used to the south, but folks up here want to help and are creating opportunities. But, if you know of housing opportunities in your area or service trips that are being organized or organizations that are ready to welcome volunteers, pass them on to me and I'll post them on here.
Professionals are leaving Center Camp to orientation. Over and out.
Let's go, guys.
Citizens of Black Rock City, make way for the Lamplighters!
Each year, in the week before Labor Day, more than 25,000 people gather on a flat playa surface of the Black Rock Desert in northern Nevada to enact the ritual, a week-long event culminating in the burning of a 70-foot-tall man effigy. This structure, which glows in blue neon at night, provides the city with a center and its most powerful talisman, to which every participant ascribes whatever meaning they choose to the experience. Any description of the week is impossible. It is a party, a temporary community, a carnival, an arts festival, and a tabula rasa for radical self-expression. It is a powerful place. While any attempt to define what happens here is inadequate, it certainly is a stage for spiritual transformation. The first time I came here last year, I thought I was inside of God's brain. That's how Marshall Elliott, writing for BeliefNet, described Burning Man. And I think that's about as good as it gets. Burning Man is perhaps one of the best examples of postmodern spiritual community that is completely outside the accepted religious traditions and expressions of the 21st and actually 20th century North America. What began as an event of what he called radical self-expression by Larry Harvey on a San Francisco nude beach in 1986, has now grown to an annual desert community of over 35,000 that is focused on creativity, the arts, self-reliance, and radical self-expression. It now has its own charitable foundation. It sponsors gatherings and chapters around the world with a network aided by the internet that connects a wide span of people who are in search of authentic community that can change the world. A world that they see as being bound by materialism, consumerism, and constructs that stifle human creativity and relationships. Now, as I start this, let me begin by saying that I have never attended a burn, which is how folks refer to it. But after studying it and learning from it about others, I think I probably need to go, and I wonder if, in fact, it is something that anyone who wants to communicate in the postmodern world needs to check out. So if they get some aspects of it wrong, well, if there's any burners out there listening, please set me straight. The website itself is a wealth of information. Now, I should say that if you check the website out, Burning Man does describe itself as family-friendly, as an organization and event. Now, I once had some concerns expressed to me that Wired Jesus might be a little dangerous and that young folks shouldn't be listening to it. Well, I'm not so sure about that. But be aware that might not be a bad way of approaching Burning Man, because if your personal definition of family is pretty narrow, prepare for it to be stretched, bent, and challenged. It's not a site you necessarily want to cruise with your five-year-old on your lap and then have to explain why the nice lady is dressed in latex and has rings in her mommy parts. Most of the website is great, very safe. But the galleries will take you to some pictures and visual images of some of the more unusual aspects of the community. When Burning Man says they are about radical self-expression, they mean it. And that includes the clear explanation that Burning Man is a clothing-optional event and instructions as to how to care for your skin while you're there. Suffice it to say, take this with a grain of salt when you visit. It will be a challenge. Enough said.
Real firemen coming through. They're not the fake kind. Those are the real ones.
If you Google Burning Man and spirituality, you will come up with a boatload of articles and blogs that talk about this particular aspect of Burning Man. There is so much more to it. But spirituality is at the heart of it, and I think spirituality and creativity go hand in hand. Now, one thing you will notice on a lot of these hits, and one thing to get out of the way right now, is the myth that Burning Man is a pagan gathering of witches, Satan worshippers, and other evil deviants. The event itself does not consider itself to be religious, but it is steeped in ritual and creative expression, self-discovery, and tolerance of others. The high point of the event is the destruction of the Burning Man. Thank you. The beeping of the phone trying to find it. As I was saying, the event itself really doesn't understand itself to be religious, but the high point is the ritual destruction of the Burning Man, which legends of the past say it connects with the old Celtic custom of the burning of the Wicker Man as a sign of renewal and birth of the new year. There's a nice link on the Burning Man site that addressed some of the myths about it. And contrary to those myths, Burning Man was not started by a bunch of hippies, and these people are not a bunch of hippies, because after all, hippies are now grandparents, and they drive around in Lexus sedans. Nor are the folks at Burning Man trying to do some kind of weird echo of cities with well-paying jobs. They are artists ranging from performance artists to metal bands to sculptors to jazz musicians who play in churches. You will find the arts of every kind and shape represented at the Burning Man. So why then am I holding up or looking at Burning Man as a model for postmodern community and spirituality? I think first off, it's in its effort to create an authentic community in an unauthentic world. When you arrive and find the place in which you are going to be camping with your group for the week, you find that money has no value. Everything is based on people gifting each other. Food, goods, everything. Other than a very small coffee shop where you can buy ice and coffee, there is no need for money. You are expected to be self-sufficient. You bring all that you need, take everything with you when you depart so that nothing is left behind at Black Rock. But not only do you bring what you need to be generous to others, and also with the expectation that you will be tolerant of their beliefs. I mean, imagine this, living in a caring, gift-based economy for a week. Again, here's how Marshall Elliott describes it in his article. He says, "For many, Burning Man is their first vision of the fully unleashed creative power of divine and our godlike roles as creators. Every thought is put into collective action here. When listening to the heart, needs seem to be magically met. Your back hurts? Go lie down at center camp. Before long, you will end up in a conversation with an incredible person who will offer you a Thai massage. Need a gallon of red paint? Ask the playa. It will happen. Often you don't even need to ask. Sometimes you don't even know you need it yet. This is the byproduct of a care-based gift economy. Vending is prohibited here. You can't buy food and you can't buy water. You can't even buy a commemorative t-shirt. But yes, someone will help you make one. Somewhere in the process of all this generosity in the face of survival, the community comes alive. Everyone waves, smiles, greets, and hugs. It's infectious and it lifts the city ever so subtly each day to higher places." I love that description, and I think it's one that Christians can resonate with, at least in the image of the Bible, if not what we end up trying to live and often don't even model in our communities. Another aspect of Burning Man that you'll find are the theme and camp villages within it, of people who gather for similar interests and expressions. And this is very, very wide, and you know, is nearly unlimited as far as what those values will be bringing them together. In fact, the very layout of Black Rock City is centered around the Burning Man figure, so that no matter where you walk, on what street, and the whole city is curved around it, you will always see the Burning Man. That is always the center. Now, as you walk through, you will find groups that will shock you, others that you will believe are long-lost family, and others that you just can't figure out no matter how long you sit there and watch them. But you are all there for the same reason. You hold to the same core values of creativity, self-reliance, and human care and kindness. Again, for those of us coming out of the Christian tradition involved in churches here in North America, there is a wavering of the center that we, you know, often seem to have lost. And to be able to say that we share the same core values in faith, in the same core values of our understanding of each other as created people of God, doesn't always come through. Something we're already wired with, though. Another key part of Burning Man is an emphasis on unrestricted creativity. In our mass production world, you may have noticed the trend to break out of baby boomer conformity. Target stores, I think, are one of the best examples in how they have pioneered the idea of mass customization to build home appliances and decor components so that everyone can decorate their home to reflect their own style using items that are mass-produced, but you mix and match all on your own. Food Network, HGTV, Old Navy, you name it. Catering to creativity is in. Restaurants seem more like Disney World now because of destination-based architecture, sensory experience, team-based organization, the portability and customization of video, art, and sound with the iPod you may be listening to right now. It's a new creative renaissance that is fueled digitally and lived out relationally. Burning Man is all about this. In some ways, it pioneered it, it engaged it, and has become a model that others in the corporate world, and I would say the spiritual world, need to learn from. While it was not the original intent, Burning Man has come to be filled with rituals that reflect and are drawn from many religious traditions, neo-pagan, Christian, tribal. There are processions that you would guess would even come out of, in a certain sense, you know, Christian or Catholic tradition, with ritual garments and items that are carried in procession, and all building up to the burn. And if you go there, all kinds of religions, including self-made ones that may be unique just to the person you're meeting, are there. And they are ready to talk, but they're also ready to put up and welcome each other, which makes it really hard for some Christians to deal with this. The importance that I see within this for postmoderns is that in a time when family and traditions have been fragmented and lost, Burning Man is developing its own rituals and traditions that an entire community shares in the midst of their diversity, and that bind them to one. You know, you consider some of the arguments that have taken place between Christian denominations in our country, let alone within Christian congregations over issues like, you know, worship, for example. There is something to be said of a community that is willing to overcome that through creativity and unleashing that and still keeping that core, to have rituals of meaning that transcend what seem to be obvious divisions. So what can Christians learn from Burning Man beyond what I've said? I was a history major in college, and there was a time when the Christian church, particularly in the Renaissance, was a driving force for creativity and new authentic community in a searching world. And sadly, that really is not true so much today. Creativity is often equated with troublemaking. Art is completely out of place in the boomer mega churches that look more like corporate offices and movie megaplexes rather than sacred space for a spiritual community. It seems that many Christians take one look at Burning Man, which models this in this aspect wonderfully, and they see parts that just absolutely freak them out and write off the whole thing as a celebration to the devil, evil, and perversion. It's not that. And looking at it, I'm convinced of that. It's not a paragon of typical Christian virtue either. I would say it is what it is. It is a culture, a community that is searching for meaning and wanting to do it as community. In that regard, it's no different than the call for Christians to be involved in the world around us. You know, in case you hadn't noticed, North America's not a real friendly place to be a Christian anymore, partly by our own doing, partly by other forces. But yet it is a spiritually hungry place where people are asking questions of meaning, where Christians really do have something to say, if they're willing to participate as a community rather than as outsiders coming in and saying what should be done. Some Christians go to Burning Man to really participate. There, it's very clear. There is very little tolerance within burner community for spectators, people who come to just kind of look around, and apparently every year they've got some, you know, kind of Christian gawkers who come out to write scathing articles about the desert perverts who are going to burn in hell with their master, and they come just before the burn and, you know, try and hand out tracts and all that type of stuff. There are some Christians who go who, in what I've read and hope to carry on further conversations, really see it as a place that Christians need to be and can learn from. One of the best is Randy Bolender. He's pastor at Vineyard Community Church in Cincinnati, Ohio. He's now a very experienced burner and has a great article on how he sees Christians as having a place at Burning Man, about how his time in the desert every year is a time of creative and spiritual renewal for him in a very spiritual and yet still very fundamental biblical sense. And as I said, he's respected enough that he has his own article on the official Burning Man webpage called A Pastor on the Playa. And he paints the picture of what he experiences there better than I can in a single podcast. Follow the link on the webpage and read it. I think his closing sentences say it best. I go to Burning Man because I have something to offer. A fresh perspective of an old institution, an image of the church rising from the ashes of hypocrisy to prove itself relevant to the age. An image of the church made up of servants, in the model of Jesus, caring for people and loving God. And that's why I go to the burn. And that's why I wandered to Burning Man.
What if God was one of us? Just a slot like one of us. Blue, 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 blue. Yeah, blah, blue, blue.
Done. Very good.
Dr. Evil, that was fantastic.
Thank you, number two.
I wrote that.
Yeah.